Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to be here, Jake. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, same from this end as well. It's always fascinating to me the types of different character that I get to meet through this podcasting journey. And even yourself, this is a cool story in that it's via Noster that we came across each other, which is fairly new, right? And I'm starting to use Noster as like, actually, what if I only look for guests on Noster? And that's quite a cool concept that I'm playing with now. Levi, to kick things off, I'm going to hit you with a simple question, but it might take an entire book to answer. What are the benefits of Bitcoin?
Well, benefits of Bitcoin. I mean, fundamentally, okay, so like there's an idea of like perfect information. And so one of my driving values is like interpersonal relationships. I love people and I love building relationships with people. And in a nutshell, when people know the kindly spoken truth about each other, they're able to make decisions about whether or not to stay. Like, it doesn't need to be romantic, just, but people are actually able to build authentic relationships when they know the truth, because they're actually saying yes or they're actually saying no. And so, I mean, if you wanted to, like, one of the powerful benefits of Bitcoin is that it clears up a lot of arguably spiritual, psychological, even to some degree physiological, because the psychological always bleeds into the physiological. It cleans up a lot of noise. And so, like my wife and I, you know, my wife and I have been married over 3 years. And if she had someone in her life that constantly lied to her, stole from her, told her things were one way when they were really the other, broke its promises, I would, like, that would not enhance the quality of our relationship. That would not enhance the quality of our marriage. It would introduce dysfunction and unhealthiness and tumultuousness, drama, etc. But people have that relationship with fiat, does the exact same thing in their relationships, but they don't clock that. And maybe I'll write a book about this and get into it. But so one of the major benefits of Bitcoin is it makes it easier. It takes a lot of stress out of marriage. Like, if you can handle the volatility, but volatility is life, as they might say. If someone dies, it's a flat line. If someone's heart is beating, the line on the screen's going up and down. I mean, that's just a very basic level. But essentially what like volatility represents is human decision-making relative to the context that they're in and their incentives and constraints that they're perceiving. There's an idea, I don't fully agree with it, but there's an idea that goes, no man is better than his incentives. And so when people are allowed to make choices relative to their own interests, preferably in a non-zero-sum game or in a win-win context, the prices are going to reflect that. People think of like cars or food or whatever it might be. They'll complain if the price increases, but actually there's volatility in price in all kinds of goods, I would assume. And so if there's no volatility, there's no life. There's no humans behind it making choices, taking human action. It kind of reminds me of like the idea that like in socialism, like we want equality. Well, like Margaret Thatcher might say, like, yes, because they want everybody at the same level of poverty. That is there's no volatility in that situation. It's pure fear and force. And so when people are, I mean, I say when people are allowed, it's not that anybody's allowing them, but when nobody stands in the way of free agents and actors, those people get to make choices. And some people, I mean, economically speaking, some people want to be rich. Some people don't care and they want to live like off grid and not talk to anybody for 10 years. Like, people are not the same. And so when people are not blocked from taking the path that they want to take and forming the relationships that they want to make, there's going to be different levels of demand for the things in their lives. And that's going to be reflected in Bitcoin. That's going to be reflected in all kinds of goods and services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's one like perspective on like volatility is life.
I love it. And there's a number of different directions we could go here, but something that's always resonated with me is the idea that the Bitcoin volatility in fiat, i.e. the US dollar Bitcoin price, is actually a much better reflection of day-to-day volatility than anything we've ever seen before. Because, like, frankly, your mood shifts from the moment you wake up till the moment you go to bed. And, you know, the recent, very recent drawdown in the last week, like the US dropping bombs on Iran, did anyone see that coming in June of 2025? It wasn't in my playbook for this year, that's for sure. And everyone's scared, because what does that mean for markets? What does that mean for supply chains? What does that mean for commodities? What does that mean for fucking everything? Well, you don't know. And therefore, everyone's a bit scared and the price comes off. What a surprise. So the idea of a stable price is actually very similar to your first point, a lie. Like, why should a price be stable? Yes, a customer would like a stable price, or an economic participant would like a stable price when it comes to planning for the future. And hence you have futures markets, right? You've got the guy who's creating the grain, you've got the person who's creating the bread.
Yeah.
Do you know what? In a year's time, I'd really like to know what my cost of grain is going to be. So I'm going to fix a futures contract right now with you, and you get some money now, and I get to pay you later. It makes sense.
Yeah, right?
That's why derivative markets even got created.
Yeah, I'm selling the volatility out of my business and out of the market that I'm participating in. I'm selling the volatility out of it. I mean, I've had the option to, in one of my businesses, to go hourly or to go just like a piecemeal, or just like as I do it, as I accomplish tasks, I get paid. And I go, if I strip the volatility out of it, okay, I can much better predict what I'll make on an hour by hour basis. But because I'm experienced in business and I know that volatility is life, I know what they're doing is they're going to take, I don't know, a 30%, a 40% haircut off the total revenue that I bring in. And I'm going to get, a predicted amount of money. And it's really interesting. Like, you have like Bob Burnett and his company that is in the ocean pool of mining, and other Bitcoin mining pools or other major mining pools, they're paying, I think, per share. So they're paying for hash rate. So the income is very predictable.
So Levi, what I'd like to cycle back to is, first of all, you've become an author during the last few years, I believe.
And, about 6 years ago.
Okay. And I'm confess, I haven't finished, but I'm 60-70% of the way through Benefits of Bitcoin.
Come on.
And what I've really loved about it is how positive it is. And it's not that I want to dream of a future that's impossible. It's like, actually, this is all first principles thinking and does make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I particularly like the way that you began this concept of the benefits of Bitcoin from a perspective of a very normal but incredibly important relationship, which is that of your life partner, your wife or your husband or whoever you choose to spend your life with, and how it gives you the ability to work from a base of fairness and truth, that if you were to sit on a fiat standard, you don't even realize that you're not doing that. And let's just spend a bit more time there. So for you personally, like, what have you noticed as Bitcoin's become a bigger part of your life and you've ended up in a marriage? Like, what are some of the things that you can share that you notice are different to before?
Well, So like different in terms of like how our relationship functions, or as
well, honestly, anything that comes to mind in a sense, but it's, I know how I used to feel when I was chasing dollars, and I know how I feel now when I have Bitcoin as a large part of my wealth.
Yeah.
And they're a complete world apart. And
yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's fun for people to think through. And if they're not as far along on this journey, it's like, where do I get to if I choose to do what these guys are doing? And it's about how you feel.
Yeah, well, so to put it simply, I'd say that there's two sides of it. There is, like you mentioned, the emotional side, and there's also the time side. So like one of the points I make in the book, and which is totally valid, and I can give you examples in our marriage. We got married over 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, and almost immediately moved to Sweden for 6 months. And my wife is working full time, and so I had a lot of time on my hands. And I won't go into all the details, but I ended up, because of all that time on my hands, I got into Bitcoin. And so we started crypto mining, but getting paid in Bitcoin. And then sold a car and did other things to move our capital into Bitcoin. And when we got married, I published two books, and she had worked on a book. But then after getting married, she was able to finish her first novel. I've finished two books since then. And the reason we were able to do that is because yes, I have now three businesses or four, but because we kept our money in Bitcoin, it appreciated at something like, I don't know, 60 to 100% a year. And so we would work like 2 or 3 months, and then we take a few months off. And because of that, we were able to not only take the 2 or 3 months necessary to write our books, we were able to set up our home here in Arizona because Bitcoin it has that volatility, but it continues year over year basically to appreciate. And we're big believers in debt's not evil, but we just prefer not to be in debt. And so we were able to get our land debt free, and then set up a home debt free. And then we continue in some sense, even to this day, because of Bitcoin and its quality of appreciation, it gives us the freedom of time, the time autonomy and the flexibility to make choices that other people can't make. If we had a 30-year mortgage and a couple of car payments, and like the commensurate expensive insurance on all these things, et cetera, we have no time freedom. We have like zero time freedom. Mm-hmm. But because we personally have values for frugality and keeping our expenses low and saving in Bitcoin, that gives us, like, our expenses are less than $500 a month. So pretty low. But anyways, so Bitcoin affords us the time to serve other people with our writing, to build relationships. And that's a massive quality of life increase. Some people, they're going to want to work 9 to 5. They get a lot of value out of that. That's amazing. For my wife and I, we value passive income. We value making shrewd business and investment choices that enable us to work for free for people by writing books, you know, because we're not getting paid up front for that. We only get paid later when it sells. And so that's one aspect of it. And so then, along with time and emotion, looking at the long term, if we're saving a substantial portion of our income each year, but in the dollar or in some other currency, it's losing 7, 20, 25 or more percent a year in buying power. That means that if we're living on what we're making, we're going to have to make 20% more a year. Or if I'm an employee, mm-hmm. I'm going to need to trade 20% more time. If I'm an employee, that's going to contribute to less time. If you're not careful, it's going to be less quality of relationship. You're not going to feel good about it. If I walk into the store or I go to the gas station and it's 20% or 40% more a year, more per year, but really we know it's currency debasement. That doesn't feel good. But then if someone is merely trading time for money, they're not investing, they're not doing passive income, they're going to be struggling even worse. Like before I got into Bitcoin, I was mainly invested in index funds through Vanguard. And at least to some degree, my investment was helping my money stay, at least keep up with inflation to some degree. But people who aren't even at that level, they're going to be struggling even worse. It's going to, and like marriages break up over stress and over finances. And like when we went into COVID, there was way more domestic violence. There was way more stress going on. There was way more alcoholism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so when a relationship, like our relationship, I mean, it's not perfect, but our relationship is amazing. And so, but if someone is like just doing okay in their relationship, and then something like a lockdown or something like losing 20 to 40% of their buying power per year, year over year comes along, maybe that's enough stress to cause somebody to behave in ways that they wouldn't otherwise behave. Even though Bitcoin has volatility, which some people predict will decrease over time, that there may be some truth to that. But when I can predict year over year, not only will my savings, if I have like $1,000 in savings or 3 to 6 months of savings, if I can predict that my savings will not only not lose buying power, just not losing buying power is a massive win, like just that. But if I'm, if I can predict that about every year to 18 months, Bitcoin will increase 60 to 100%. Of course, some of that's inflation, but in purchasing power relative to goods and services, housing, et cetera, et cetera. That's a massive weight off. And that might, depending on my situation, that might be able to afford me to go into a new business. That might afford, that can afford me more time with people that I care about. So Bitcoin, one of Bitcoin's main benefits, I know I've already touched on this, but it really contributes to the healthy stability in a marriage, emotionally speaking.
Yeah, it's very, very important, isn't it? It's like a, every couple should be doing this all the time, but it's like a resilience stress test. It's like, what pressure can you guys take and still thrive? And a 50% reduction in net assets, either driven by, you know, market volatility or driven by inflation, whatever it might be, that would be enough to tip most, you know, quote unquote debt slaves over the edge, right? You mentioned already, you might have house payments, you might have car payments, you might have insurance payments, you might have all this stuff to pay. And when the base rate of interest is put up, all of it gets more expensive and they print money at the same time. So the purchasing power of that money is disintegrating too. Yeah. It's like a kind of, it's a vortex of, well, resilience is the wrong word. It's like, it's a wrecking ball. And you know, marriage is hard enough as it is. I've got three kids now, so throw into the mix some children and, you know, things can get intense. And doing it from a base of truth and doing it from a base of sound money in which you can start to predict the future, you know the future supply assurance, you know the performance to date, you can make a pretty good guess on where you think it might be. That is a game changer. I absolutely agree with you.
Oh, yeah. It's revolutionary.
And Levi, one thing I wanted to spend time talking about was the purchase of land that you've gone through, because I love this, right? You cannot live in a Bitcoin, and it's a problem that I'm working on currently.
Yep.
So you've decided to buy some land. You decided to go debt-free. You decided to get set up on that land debt-free. Just talk me through the decision-making process. Like, how did you find it? Why was that what you wanted to do? And how do you feel having gone through it?
Sure. Well, my wife and I, not so much right now, but we have traveled extensively over the last 3 years. And before that, both of us traveled relatively extensively. I lived overseas for over 7 years in Asia and the Middle East. And my wife traveled back and forth from Sweden to the U.S. And then after getting married, we traveled to over 35 states, just exploring, doing business, having a great time. And but we got to the point where it's like, okay, we want to have babies. We need a place to we need a place to camp permanently, or at least for like maybe 10 years. And so we had looked all over the country, and we hadn't really found a place that we liked. But one of my driving values is what works, as opposed to just merely cooperating with people. I love people, but sometimes people are dumb, and cooperating in dumb circumstances is a bad idea. And so at one point we traveled into Arizona, and one of the nuggets that I caught from Samson Moe at one point, he was describing how his spiel, when he's talking to, like, I guess, heads of state or something to that effect, he would say that Bitcoin is money. And I'm missing something, but if you have abundant energy, you are wealthy, because a nation state can tap their hydro, geothermal, et cetera, energy and then, sources.
And get paid in Bitcoin. Yeah,
absolutely. And then mine. But that caught on for me, because I'd been working on my own solar and power production over the course of years, and learning how to build solar systems. And in a nutshell, when we drove into Arizona and I see this wide open flat spaces that's drenched in sunshine over 300 days a year, I'm going, maybe getting land here is a good idea. Like, we want to live in forest and in Montana or something like that, but we're just going, the sun here is so good. The energy abundance here is amazing. And since we're into passive income, I can tap that energy source. So we ended up, long story short, getting just over an acre, not very big, but just over an acre in Kingman, Arizona. And I won't give you our address, but there's lots of desert. And
cool.
But when we found this land, it was very inexpensive, but still had access to town. And then over the preceding 2 years, because we bought the land just over a year ago, our Bitcoin had appreciated, doubled in fiat terms. And so we're looking at this inexpensive land, and I'm going, well, on 1 acre, and I ran the numbers, I could, if I max out the solar on this, I could produce $800 a day in Bitcoin, or today it'd be 800,000 sats a day if I maximize this. I'm going, we don't need 40 acres. We don't need, I'm thinking 100, 1,000 acres. No, I don't need that. I can generate tremendous income and not need to pay for the electricity, which is going to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest expense, on an acre of sun-drenched land. And our piece of land happens to be very well situated for sunshine, because the mountains around us draw the clouds away. And so a lot of times we're in sun when the mountains are not, some of the mountains near us. And I talked to God about it, and God gave me a good feeling about it. So based on the practicality and our spirituality, I went for it, and we went for it.
Awesome.
And so we've built out a relatively large solar system And that enables us to mine practically 24 hours a day, in addition to supporting a lot of our household needs. And we've only tapped like a fraction of the potential of this land.
Wow. So that is an unbelievably cool explanation of a series of things that weren't previously possible being pulled together at once for your benefit. And the things I'm referring to being solar energy, right? The technology to have solar panels has become accessible to the retail market, and Bitcoin. And you are essentially, you are monetizing stranded energy as a private investor.
Yes,
which is what I particularly love, right? Yeah. You've basically come along, you've taken all these things off the shelf, put them together. And so actually, in some ways, I'm thinking of it like this. When you go to look for land, can you monetize the land with Bitcoin mining somehow? And instead of saying, oh, look, I'm going to put an annex on the garage and I'm going to run an Airbnb business and try and get some tourists to come for yield on my land.
Exactly.
Or I'm going to have like, you know, start growing wine or become some kind of farmer. It's like, no, you could actually use the sunshine should you choose to set up in a specific place.
Yeah.
What an awesome story.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And Levi, I think, forgive me for bringing this up, but it's, well, not forgive me, this is a key part of it. The mining that you're doing is not specific Bitcoin mining, but you're getting paid in Bitcoin. Would that be fair to say?
That's correct. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so people will, the Bitcoin only mantra is very, very important. Do not get me wrong. Like, there's only going to be one future base layer of money, and it's Bitcoin. It is not altcoins. But creating capital to then plow into Bitcoin is fair game. Now, you could be trading interest rate swaps. You could be selling, you know, ham from your local farm. You could be selling your time as a coach.
Yeah, exactly.
You could be doing anything to accumulate Bitcoin. Yeah. And I applaud that. Like, what you basically said, that's the shit you want to own. How do you get more of that shit? Okay, I've figured out a way of doing it. Awesome.
What's
been some of your biggest lessons from that, Levi? Like, what took you the longest to figure out, or what was the most expensive kind of fuck up that happened along the way?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been fired over 20 times. I worked in construction. I worked in a lab. I worked retail. I taught English as a foreign language overseas for over 7 years. So I didn't know it at the time, but I would say overall, maybe my biggest mistake was deciding to become an employee. I was raised in a business household. So my dad's business, like, it was boom or bust. He was in construction. And I worked with him for several years in construction. And so, like, when times are good, it's great. When they're not, it's the dregs. And so, like, very young, when I was a kid, I decided to become an employee because I'm like, oh, I want a paycheck every week. I want stability. I didn't think of it necessarily at the time, but that's what I was thinking. And so I worked hard and I got decent at sales and I started businesses. But I was balancing that, like, I'm being a business person, but I'm also an employee. So deciding to become an employee, hey, I needed to do it. I needed to sort out that career path. But that was probably the biggest mistake because I was making door-to-door sales at like 10 years old. I had a talent for entrepreneurship and for communicating in sales. So I'd say that's probably the biggest mistake. But then when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in my like early to mid 20s, that planted the idea of entrepreneurship and passive income. And then I proceeded to practically ignore that advice for the next 20 years. But I just had that in the back of my mind. And then when I was a professor, at one point in China. And I managed to, I would mostly teach English courses, but I managed to get them to let me teach a business English course. And I started training my students in the game Cash Flow that Robert Kiyosaki and his company, I guess, invented. And but that was also training me is part of what I was doing, because I'm teaching what I'm wanting to learn as well. And so I started trying. I tried online business. I wrote and published my first book about 6 years ago. I tried dividend investing and passive income investing, and just like, and I just kept trying things because I didn't know what was going to work. And I was also trying a very different way of life than what I was raised in. In my family, it's a good idea to work full time, but it's like, I don't mind working hard or long, but I prefer to work smart instead of just trying to put a whole bunch of time into just making something work if it's not the best idea. And so I gradually started to sort out ideas over the last like 6 years when I really got more serious about passive income. And so when I met my wife, and again, like we lived in Sweden for 6 months and I had all this time on my hands, I came across a company called Cryptex, and that enabled me with my gaming laptop at the time and the fees that were being paid out of Ethereum mining at the time were massive. And don't worry, Ethereum's a shit coin, but it's just, for me, it's just a means to an end. And so, but one of the turning points for me in this was I asked God, like, what's the fundamental game in this like crypto mining or whatever I would call it? What's the fundamental game? Because I couldn't tell, is it investing to appreciate? Is it building the passive income side? Is it a combination of, like, where is it? And God said, it's power production, basically. So that was like kind of a revelation. Whether it's crypto mining or Bitcoin mining, like my wife and I are like, we're aiming to get into Bitcoin mining, but it takes kind of a little bit of special electrical infrastructure to make that happen. So we'll get there. But basically I realized this is not a crypto mining game. This is an energy game. So however much energy I can build a system to produce, I can sell. So this isn't crypto mining. This isn't fundamentally a crypto mining game. It's an energy production game. And even though I'm not an engineer by training, I'm an educator by training. I am an engineer by temperament. And so I think of things very technically and from first principles, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I realized, based on Samson Moe's statement, if you have abundant energy, you're wealthy, I realized, oh, I can engineer, I can build a powerful solar system. And then like eventually we'll get into like hydropower. And if we're really lucky, we'll get into nuclear. But, you know, that's a big hill to climb. I realized, oh, I can build a massive solar system, and I can sell that in my desire. Right now we're doing that with crypto mining because it's easier infrastructurally. But we'll get into Bitcoin mining and we'll just turn the sun into sats on a continual basis.
So a couple of things you've mentioned there. I also read Rich Dad, Poor Dad a number of years ago, and I mean, that is a legendary book, isn't it? It really opens your eyes to a different way of approaching life. And, you know, shout out to Robert Kiyosaki. Hopefully I'll get to meet him one day, for the influence he's had on people to kind of take responsibility for themselves and go, actually, I'm going to do this on my own. And here's the way I'm going to at least try. Yeah. And if you take that step to try, you're going to get it wrong. But that's okay. Yeah. Because as you get things wrong, you then figure them out. But what I'd like to draw on, Levi, is God and what that means to you. And when you're making a decision about something, how do you do that? And why does God help you do that?
Absolutely. Well, some people think of God as distant, resigned, aloof, uninterested. That could not be more wrong. God, I mean, the Bible tells us that God is essentially as close as our breath. If you look in the Bible, I'm not trying to get preachy at all, but if you look in the Bible, God is constantly interacting with humanity and interacting with people and calling people his friend, like with like certain individuals and prophets, etc. So God wants intimacy with people. And so I attended basically like a Bible college some years ago. And in one of the electives I took, what I learned, which was different from what I thought. I thought, oh, like entrepreneurship is kind of evil. That's like kind of the vibe that like culture puts out. It's not true, but that's the vibe. And what I learned was, no, God wants to be my business partner. He wants to help me make money. He wants to enable me to support a family. He wants me to, like, heaven is an abundant place. Heaven is the standard. I get to have, like, and based on my interactions with God, I get to have heaven in my life. You know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It comes out of the Lord's Prayer. What that looks like is, what if I had access to AI that had perfect information? So I could ask it any question and I would get the correct answer in context that directly pertain to the kind of decisions that I'm facing, price points, marketing, what clients to serve, what clients not to serve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what book to write next. And so I'm a very practical person, and that's because God created me that way. And so God works with me practically. And so if I have a question, I can just ask him. And because we live in not only a physical and a psychological universe, but we also live in a spiritual universe. In Bitcoin, and when we think of money, you think of something called spatial saleability. We're gradually in our money, we're going from gold, arguably, and fiat money. Fiat money has better spatial saleability, but you can print it ad infinitum, so it's not good for money. But we're essentially graduating from almost purely physical money, which is gold, which is relatively hard to mine and increases at like 1.7% supply a year, but it's not spatially saleable. So in effect, we're going from gold to Bitcoin, which is hard to mine, but is spatially saleable. And so you could make the argument that we're taking a step towards spiritual money. And so, like Bitcoin gives us much purer monetary signal relative to inflation and our own futures and decreasing our time preference and gets us into a place where we can make better decisions. So when I'm relating to God, not only can I get access to information as it pertains into relating to my wife better, or we're going to have our first baby this September, and relationships with our future children, et cetera, et cetera. But that also pertains onto entrepreneurship and business, because God cares about what we care about. Like, God created this reality. And since God is interested in this reality and designed the fundamental rules of this reality, when we operate in intimacy with him, if I go, you know, God, what's your best solution to this problem? He can communicate to me and to any person, really. I'm nobody special in that regard, and give me the kind of information I need and the kind of insight I need relative to the kinds of decisions that I need to make. And so God becomes a powerful, like, business partner. And so this isn't like a religious thing. It's more like God wants relationship. And so I'm like, yeah, like, I'll have God as my best friend if that's what he wants.
And Levi, what I find fascinating is interpretation. So my reality is different to your reality. My wife's reality is different to my reality. The ability to interpret, it is down to the individual in a sense. And so what I find so cool listening to that is that's your interpretation of how it works. And the output of that interpretation is all the stuff you've created. You know, the land that you've purchased, the family that you're building, the books that you've written. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. So congratulations, and in particular on the exciting news that you have a new arrival coming in September. That's wonderful.
I know, it's great.
What does it actually mean in practice, Levi? Do you take 10 minutes and meditate? Or are you able just to kind of drop into a zone where you just speak with God at the click of a finger? And does it require practice? Or are you able to, like you've honed it over time?
Sure. Well, I could go a lot of different directions, but I'll put it this way. You're married, right?
Yes. Yeah. Married with three kids.
Yeah, you're married. And so when you're, when you, you know, and I, et cetera, when we're in such an intimate relationship, we're living day in and day out with someone, we get to know their idiosyncrasies. We get to know them very intimately. We get to know what their preferences are. We get to know, like, not necessarily perfectly, but through that involvement and a lack of secrets, we get to know like how a person would respond. So you could make the argument that not in a codependent enmeshment form, but you could make the argument that a husband and wife become one over time. That they're not literally the same person, but they become so well acquainted with one another, they could go, oh, she would not make that kind of choice. She would do this. Or he wouldn't say that. He would say this. Essentially, in the marriage, you become partners in running your household, running businesses, raising kids, et cetera, et cetera. And you get to know that person very well. So getting to know and live as one with my spouse is like living as one with God. So like I have my own ways of like sort of meditating or connecting with God, and declarations that I make every day, and expressions of gratitude, etc. But fundamentally what it comes down to is interactions. So for me, the interactions, like I'm very practical. So, and I'm an author, so I like to write. So one of the practices that I've learned over the years that God has kind of coached me in is telling him all my secrets, positive, negative, plain, dreams for the future, all my secrets. If I'm struggling with something, I can tell him. All right. So what I personally do is I'll crack open a Word document. I have a Word document journal. I write down the date and maybe some more details. And then I'll use one of the names of God, Father, Jesus, Holy Spirit, because I'm a Christian, and or all three. And then I'll just start telling them, like, what's going on with my life? What's going on with my day? What am I struggling with? What am I happy about? What are the fears I'm struggling with? Is there anything I feel ashamed of? It doesn't have to be all these things. It's a little bit on the like free flow side of writing. But I've learned that God is a really good therapist, and that if I'm going through something that there's a lot of tension in, I can just tell God about that, like I would tell a best friend, and the light that comes in through that expression, can heal me and bring peace. And so that's one side of like an intimate interaction, disclosing all kinds of secrets of mine to God through writing. And like writing kind of helps me to like slow down my thoughts. And cause I think pretty quickly. So with writing, I actually need to think about like what I'm saying and be a bit more intentional about it. But then the other side of that is writing down what I feel or think or see that God is saying to me. So if I get done writing, maybe I'll write down Levi dash like God's talking to me. And then I'll listen. And God has certain characteristics. He's good. He's gentle. He's humble. et cetera, et cetera. He's essentially just the perfect father, not a tyrant, but loving and supportive. So he's the most powerful and the most humble at the same time. And so if I'm writing and I'm writing down what I think God's telling me, if I hear something that doesn't sound like God, maybe something that's like overly critical or condemning or shaming, well, that's obviously not God. I can just X that out. And so I'll write down what I think God is telling me. And what the Bible says is that man lives not by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So when I have told God my secrets and let him into my psyche and let him into my life, we are in a certain like psychological sense one. And then when God speaks to me and I write down his words, I'm getting his words have life and they minister life to me. And then that gives me the life, the peace, the sanity to that I can then pass on that energy to my wife, to other people in conversation. And so it's through that. And so for me, that's how I practice it. Other people practice it differently. Perhaps some it's art, some it's dancing, whatever it might be. But for me, it's linguistic and in writing and interacting. Because that's, that's the kind of person I am.
It's amazing, isn't it? You're keenly investing into a spiritual relationship with another that is not physical, that has characteristics and behavioral traits, and is able to mentor you on the hardest things that you're experiencing in life. That filters through to the base layer of life, which is a marriage. You know, it's helping you be the man that you are. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
You hear so many, you hear a lot of like the self-help gurus out there saying like you should journal every day. And it's very interesting. Again, interpretation. It's like, what works for you and how do you do it? And that's what I'm always interested in asking. So I don't really care how other people do it right now, because I'm speaking with you, Levi, and learning from you. So that's a brilliant place for us to tie a bow in the conversation. Levi, thank you so much for your time today. It's been brilliant learning your story and just hearing the progress that you've made. It's fantastic. Well done. And so my final question is just really a send-off.
So
if people want to reach out and get in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Absolutely. If you want to check out my books and also my wife's books, you can go to fikatimebooks.com, and fika is FIKA. It's a Swedish coffee dessert tradition that we named it after because we love community and sugar and coffee. I love coffee. So fikatimebooks.com. And then you can find me on Noster at Levi Writes Books. It is the same on Twitter, but I'm trying to hang out mostly on Noster these days. It's the best place to build.
Yeah, it is. And actually, I should just touch on what you mentioned before the call on email, that you've started a business doing some English language stuff for Koreans, and you're doing it via Noster, which is very cool.
That's true.
Well, let's tie it up there. Thank you so much for your time, Levi.
It's been great to be on, Jake. Thank you.